Blog Talk Radio.
Have more for you to listen to from Harriet Tubman. Stay tuned. We'll meet you in the atmosphere to continue with our celebrity, our hero, Moses. 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 Stay tuned.
Well, Moses is the message. God, take it the message to our brothers and sisters.
Omega 7 Live coming to you on a Sunday. Ladies and gentlemen, our dates, we have had continuous dates that were open, and now we're going to fix our dates into two convenient dates, and that's going to be Saturday and Sunday starting from next week on. Now, we might have the 29th in there as well. However, because of the fact that I am preoccupied throughout the week, it's a little difficult time to get on during the week, so we're going to for sure have our featured show on Saturday evenings, preferably around 5, and on Sunday, preferably around 5 or at noontime. So please do look out for our new date and time change. As I said, we're going to continue with Harriet. She is our featured guest that we have resurrected from our ancestors to talk about. Now, you know I have much on my mind and much to talk about, so I want to address something else today, and that is the ability of academians and learned people, not just teachers and not just educated academic people, but learned people to set up their own institutions. That's right. If we can be evil and give good gifts to our children, how much more can the Heavenly Father give to us who ask? And I'm asking that he put it on all the hearts of the teachers that they would want to be an institution and to help set up a society of institutions for our people. Our schools are crumbling. Our schools are falling apart at the seams as we speak. They are not faring well for our African-American children. I talk about this all the time. I was able and I managed to get out of a system that was collapsing. I managed to get out, and I promised that I would try to do something about it. Where I am doing something about it, I'm in private schools now, integrating what I think makes up a good school as a contracted consultant. However, I plan to do more. I plan to even have my society, my very own society one day of a family life center that will address all of the issues of families who have problems with academic problems with their children, families who have problems in the school system where their children can't receive services, families who are not able to go to the church on Sunday and gain all the information and knowledge about what their special needs child needs. I plan to do something about offering more services to families who have challenged children who need more help than the average family. I plan to also talk about helping to set up societies so that our teachers can go back to school and get proper training as well. So those are things in the making that I plan to do, but we're going to talk about them in detail right after we finish talking about Moses. So why don't you join us and let's go into the throne of grace and let us offer up thanksgiving for all of our heroes and sheroes. We haven't had a chance to pour libation, and I want to offer up libations to Oladulamare by saying we give Oladulamare the highest praise and honor. And we also acknowledge our mother spirit, which is Yamanye, and we pour libations to her. We like to offer up libations to our father spirit, which is Obatala, and we pour libations to him. And today we're going to offer up libations to also to Harriet Tubman for the work that she did, because we know without the work that she did, we would be molested and we would not be free to speak on these airways even right now as I speak. And because of her heroic work that she did as a nurse and as a lieutenant in the Army and bearing arms and fighting for us, we're able to speak free some point, we think, on airways where we would normally have been molested and prohibited from even speaking and reading English. I want to thank Harriet for all the work she did, and we cannot patronize her enough, and it, on every radio station, someone should be echoing the name of Harriet. She gave a voice to the voiceless, and she gave freedom to a nation of people. Even though they put high stakes on her head and threatened to kill her and threatened to put people in prison who taught others to read, she continued to travel on her journey. And I want to acknowledge her today. And I want to say thank you, and I want to say to God be the glory. Now, in 1860, according to the source, approximately 500 blacks left Canada. Annually to rescue friends and families in the southern parts of the state. And these people carried the Underground Railroad and the Underground Telegraph into ready every southern state. Now, they had telegraphs, mind you now. We're talking about back in the 1800s. And Harriet Tubman was one of the people who went south to deliver her people from slavery. Born to Amaretta Ross around 1820, Harriet spent 25 years in slavery until she escaped from Dorchester County, Maryland in 1849. Her freeing herself from slavery, she returned to the South, states 19 times, to free more than 300 others. Harriet considered herself a vessel through which someone greater than herself acted. She behaved as God's commander. Long ago, when the Lord told me to go free my people, I said, "No, Lord, I can't go down. Ask me." But he come back another time. I saw him just as plain. Then I said again, "Oh, Lord, away. Get thee away. Get some better educated person. Get another person that's wiser, more cultured, Dane, than I am. Go away, Lord. But she came back, and he came back a third time and spake to me, just as he did to Moses. And he said, Harriet, maidservant, I want you. And I knew then I must do what he bidded me. Following God's command, Harriet became a legend in her own time, ladies and gentlemen. Harriet experienced some personal pain, as you would think. As she carried out these missions, her husband refused to join her in freedom. While en route, two of her brothers turned back before they reached freedom. She said, John, you're going to wade the water, else you're going to be a dead Negro. John refused to, and he was left behind. That's what he was. Before they could reach freedom territory, as a result, Harriet was lonely and longed for her family and friends, she recalled. I had crossed the line of which I had so long been dreaming. I was free, but there was no one to welcome me to the land of freedom. I was a stranger in a strange land, and my home, after all, was in the old cabin quarters with the old folks and my brothers and sisters. But to this solemn resolution I came. I was free, and they should be free also. To be free also, I would want to make them free. I wanted to make a home for them in the north, and the Lord helping me, I would bring them all there. Harriet immediately began to work to free her family, hearing that her sister and two nieces were about to be sold into Baltimore. Harriet went in to rescue them. A few months later, she rescued a brother and two others. It was also in 1850 that she took six others to Philadelphia. William Steele, a black dispatcher and station keeper on the Underground Railroad, chronicles their arrival. He noted that Harriet was both ordinary and extraordinary. Of her, and he said, Harriet was a woman of no pretensions, indeed a more ordinary specimen of humanity could hardly be found among the most unfortunate looking farm hands of the South. But her looks did not match. She had something more important than good looks. Still continued saying, yet in a point of courage, shrewd upness, and dissenting and interesting, an exertion to rescue her fellow men by making personal visits to Maryland among the slaves, she was without her equal. Harriet usually took fugitives to Pennsylvania or New York. With a new Fugitive Slave Act was passed in 1850. This act required that slaves who escaped into free land be returned to their slaveholders because this act was repressive and led to the kidnapping and return of free blacks to the slave South. Harriet began taking fugitive slaves to Canada rather than handing them over to station keepers to be passed along the way. She accompanied them. I wouldn't trust Uncle Tom with my people no longer, she said. Harriet was so busy freeing her people that she walked her shoes out. Without shoes, however, Harriet continued her mission without fear, Thomas Garrett observed. I never met with any person in any color who had more confidence in the voice of God as spoken to her soul. She was frequently told me that she talked with God and he talked with her every day of her life. And she was declared to me that she felt no fear of being arrested by her former master or any other person for that matter, for she had never ventured but where God would send her. Relying on her faith in God and her intelligence, Harriet invaded slave catchers and slave holders. She changed her route oftentimes. For example, sometimes instead of going from Maryland to Pennsylvania, she stopped in a depot in Blackburn, Cameron, and Dove Middleton, and Newcastle on her way to Wilmington, Delaware, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. En route to freedom, Harriet made it clear to fugitives that there would be no turning back. She carried a pistol to enforce her code. She believed that a live runaway could do a great harm by going back, but a dead one could tell no secrets or no lies. The middle passage was the middle passage was the place. The Underground Railroad workers, as the most dangerous time of the escape, this was the period from the time they felt the plantation to the time they reached the anti-slave office or a safe house in the north of Canada. As a testament to the fugitives' resolve to be free and to Harriet's determination to free them, none of her passengers ever turned back. Each of them reached freedom safely, right on time. The strategies Harriet used in helping the slaves escape were simple. She left the plantation on Saturday night to get a head start. Harriet needed distance in order to avoid being as easily tracked, and she wanted time to pass before the slaveholder placed Mr. Person's slave advertisement in the newspaper on Monday to alert the slaves regarding their departure. Harriet sang the favorite spiritual, and this is how it went. Darken the stony is a pathway where the pilgrims make their way. But beyond this vale of sorrow lies a field of endless days. Now let me sing that again. Dark and stony is a pathway where the pilgrims make their way. But beyond this vale of sorrow lies a field of endless days. Upon hearing this song, slaves prepared to escape. Dark and the stony is a pathway where the pilgrims make his way. But beyond this veil of sorrow lies a field of endless days. Upon hearing this song, all of the slaves gathered to prepare to escape. While helping the slaves escape, Harriet had many dramatic rescues. One of her most daring escapes occurred in 1858 in Troy, a city in northeastern New York. On the day that Charles Nailey, a fugitive slave, was to be returned to his owner, Harriet went to the United States Commissioner's office where Nailey was held to rescue him. As a United States Marshal and another law reinforcement officer led Nailey away, Harriet, a 5 foot tall, frail woman, grabbed the marshal and the lawman and wrestled them to the ground. She grabbed Nailey, put her bonnet on his head, and dragged him down to the river where a boat was waiting. Harriet followed in a ferry boat until they reached the other side of the river, where they once again struggled with the law enforcement. Harriet, with the help of other women, escaped, and they put Nailey in a wagon bound north. He safely arrived in Canada within a few days. Although Harriet helped many escape, her success did not ride her of her need to be with her husband and family. Therefore, she returned to Maryland to rescue John Tubman. John Tubman and other family members. Unfortunately, Harriet John had remarried and refused to see her. Brokenhearted and angry, Harriet at first decided to create a disturbance, but then she resolved it. If John could do without her, she could do without him too. Thus, she continued the work that she had promised, rescuing, in addition to others, her sister, six brothers, and their wives and fiancés, and her nephews and nieces. In 1857, Harriet led her elderly parents out of slavery. Thomas Garrett, a friend, provided her with money so that she could take her parents to Canada. Harriet, however, did not depend on gifts or other people's money to aid her work. She worked to provide much of her money she needed for her campaign into slave territory. She was employed as a cook, laundress, and scrub woman. With which of the money she earned, Harriet continued to assist black people with the funds that she made of her personal own resources. Throughout her life, Harriet remained committed to ending slavery. She used every opportunity and strategy available to her to carry out this mission. Therefore, Harriet introduced herself to people who shared her vision and supported her work, recognizing that emotional support was necessary to complete her job. Harriet formed friendships with such notable people as John Brown, a man who tried to end slavery through violent means. Though Brown's insurrection failed, nevertheless continued to inspire Harriet to do great work, work that continued to provoke conflict between Harriet and the slaveholders and the national politician. Fearing that she and members of the Underground Railroad would eventually be discovered, Harriet tried to obtain assistance for slaves through other means. By the winter of 1861, she and other abolitionists organized a fugitive and society for ex-slaves who escaped from the South and the states of Canada. Harriet hoped that this organization would help her acquire legal protection for former slaves who settled in Canada. Being the ambitious and courageous woman that she was, Harriet did more than organize resistance to slavery. She attacked political leaders as well. She especially disliked President Abraham Lincoln because he was not committed to ending slavery. During the Civil War in 1861 through 1865, Lincoln wanted to preserve the Union with as little destruction as possible. Because President Lincoln refused to declare the abolition of slavery a war goal, God, according to Harriet, won't let Massa Lincoln beat the South till he do the right thing. Harriet freeing the slaves was the right thing to do. She said Lincoln was a great man and she was only a poor person, but she could tell Massa Lincoln how to save money and young men. He could do it by setting the slaves free, Harriet declared. Harriet was hypothetical because Lincoln realized that she was right. Lincoln eventually freed some of the slaves, the ones who lived in the rebellious state, so they could fight for the Union Army. Many stories describe how noble and courageously slaves fought to end slavery and how they helped President Lincoln win the Civil War. While the slaves actually engaged in Civil War battles between 1862 and 1865, Harriet did not sit back and watch. She continued to fight herself. This time, she attacked the institution of slavery by serving in the war. Fulfilling her call in this capacity, Harriet served 3 years in the United Army under the commander of Colonel James Montgomery of the 2nd South Carolina Volunteer, a regiment of black soldiers. She acted as a spy, a scout, and a nurse. In these capacities, Moses went through Union lines freely, using her innate gift as a geographical, topographical, and mathematician. In her scouting and spying activity, Harriet surveyed featured characteristics of the land and calculated the distribution of the people. She charted maps and categorized explicit mental images of the land and the disbursement of the people in her mind. Harriet and her scouting team carried this information directly to Montgomery. She described in pinpoint details the location of amortization, depot, cotton, warehouses, Confederate encampment, and slave awaiting the liberation in South Carolina, Georgia, and Florida. Harriet's skills were unique. Serving time, she commanded troops, both black and white, on scouting raids. In June 1863, she made a most spectacular and celebrated expedition up the Cambay River in South Carolina with Harriet at the top of the gunboat. Montgomery and his 800 black soldiers followed her up to the river to the point of destination, where they destroyed millions of dollars worth of missionary stores, cotton warehouses, and loyalty dwelling without the loss of a man or receiving a scratch. In addition, 756 slaves, nearly all of whom were able-bodied men, joined black regiments in South Carolina. This large number of slaves was twice as many as Harriet liberated single-handedly as conductor of the Underground Railroad. During battle, Harriet was rough. She was never shot or hurt. Once she found it exceedingly difficult to liberate some slave, she recounted her dilemma in a dictated letter to the Boston Commonwealth in June 1863 in her late expedition up to the river. She related, "I was carrying two pigs for a poor sick woman who had a child to carry. An order was given for them to hurry, and Harriet said, I started to run, stepped on my dress, began rather long, and fell and tore it off completely." The wearing of bloomers is what she needed, and she asked them to purchase her some. In addition to going so far to request these bloomers, she now had to wear them. In addition to on for as the spy, Harriet acted as a nurse and an employment agent during the Civil War. She said, among other duties which I have had, I look forward to working in the hospital the most. Now, those are just some little tidbits about who Harriet really was. But we all know she was our hero. Harriet was really more like a medical practitioner than a nurse. She became so noted for her herb remedies that any army officer asked her to go to Federation in Florida to the nurse soldiers who were dying of drastic diseases. Harriet cured many of these conditions. She cured them with her herbs. During her 3 years of service, Harriet earned $200. That is about $66.33 a year. She used her earnings to build a warehouse for Fed for freed women in Florida so that they could become self-supporting and self-sufficient. She left the Deep South by 1865. She worked in a contraband and hospital in Virginia on the James River at the end of the war. She was working as a matron of a colored hospital at Fort Monroe, Virginia, as an Underground Railroad conductor, abolitionist, revolutionary, spy, scout, nurse, guerrilla fighter, medical practitioner, employment agent. Harriet, by age 40, had done more than more people in their lifetime. Still was not enough for her. She found by her promise to help people that she had to continue on. In the final years of her life, Harriet no longer fought slavery, which had ended in 1865. She, however, had to help her people fight poverty and illiteracy in Albany, New York, and the place where she moved after leaving Virginia in 1865. Harriet settled in the home she had purchased prior to the war in New York. Harriet took care of her aged parents and needy people. She as well supported freedom schools in the South. Harriet did this work even though she was poor and always in need of money. A biography of Harriet written by her friend Sarah Hopkins during 1880 earned some money. With the money raised by selling copies of this book, Harriet converted her home into the home of indigents and aged Negroes. She used the 25 acres of land that she resided on and set up a community farm. It was later deed to the African Methodist Episcopal Zion Church so that it could be maintained after her death. Looking beyond black daily needs, Harriet realized that black people needed an active political voice. She recognized the importance of voting and supported it for civil rights, which all Americans are entitled. Harriet campaigned for black rights to vote because she believed that voting was the opportunity for black people to help themselves. She viewed them as intelligent and hardworking people who made responsibility and decision easier. To show her support by black women's rights, Harriet attended the 1869 organizational meeting of the National Association of Colored Women in Washington, D.C. At the age of 70, Mother Harriet was the oldest woman in the meeting. Other women like Fanny Jackson Coughlin, Charlotte Thornton, and Frances E.W. Harper, Ella Shepherd Moore, and Rosetta Douglas all attended the meeting, and there was also a new generation of women like Ida B. Wells, Dr. Rebecca Cole, Victoria E. Matthew, Alice Moore, Josephine St. Perry Ruffin, Margaret Murray Washington, who were also determined to help black women and black people. In March of 1913, Harriet Tubman died in her sleep. She was 93 years old, ladies and gentlemen. Harriet lived a full life. She gave much of her time, energy, and resources to serving black people. She likewise gave some attention to her own needs. Harriet married Nelson Davis in 1869. She was almost 50, and although she was 25 years, she outlived him until her death. She was continued to fight against the injustice black people face. Harriet's work remains a model for those struggling against social injustice in our days. Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to remember, as teachers, as scholars and academia, we're responsible for setting up institutions just like Harriet did. We need safe schools, and we need schools that will represent the dignity that our ancestors left behind. Therefore, we cannot wait another minute for our schools to collapse. We need to build institutions and societies that will retrain teachers, that will also allow us to put forth a curriculum that is African-centered, that will focus in on our ancestors and do not direct our children right from the academic school into the penal institution, because that's exactly where they are directed to go. And we will have to break that barrier. As a teacher, I stand up and say that to break the barrier means sometimes you have to get out and go on the outside to do the work. And if need be, go on the outside to help institutions get set up. We need family life resource centers that will help the parents to see all the services that are available to them through all of our resources online. We need families to be able to go to family resource centers and have a lending library that can check out materials to help their disabled children. We need to also inform those parents that they're entitled to employment. If their child is a disabled child, the government must provide services and opportunities for these families to work if they choose to. We must also be able to get the ADA laws out to the parents so that they know what their rights are when their children are given a ticket of disability. Not only are you to just pick up a check, but you are to pick up the 504 and the 94-142 and read those articles and also read those chapters and find out what your child's rights are for the IEP and for transitioning. We ought to be creating plans for those seniors who are disabled and are at-risk children to transition into the workforce or into institutions called higher levels of learning. We've got to create family resource centers, not just another school, but a resource center in the community, so that these resource centers will be directed towards helping parents become better parents and utilizing their resources. We can no longer just create a school without a parent institute to help raise up the parent. As you know, I always say it doesn't take a village to raise a child, but it takes a parent to raise up a village. We've got to raise up a village of family resource centers so we can educate our parents. Once we educate our parents, then we can educate our children. There's no sense in us keeping a light on at home if there's no one at home to raise that child. A village won't raise a child by itself. There must be a parent in that village to raise up that child. And with family resource centers, which I advocate for, we can have one in every community. We can create them in every block. And they can be throughout the community. And they can replace our mutilated, decrepit churches who are not doing the job of servicing our families. We must provide a resource center for our families, of also technical assistance for those children who cannot use the proper tools in education for special ed. We must create technical assistance for them to have apparatuses and technologies that will help them to utilize high technology. We must incorporate new engineers into our program. Our program must reflect that of our society. There are very few engineers that are being made in the United States. We must start preparing students who are of all races and all disabilities to become engineers, because they are explorators who will explore a problem and find a solution. We must start preparing our girls for the engineering path as well as preparing them for the biomedicine path. We must do an exclusive job in the homeschool to start earlier in networking and collaborating with these homeschools. There's a lot more we can do than just open up another charter school. Opening up another charter school should mean that we're collaborating with them on the basis of a public school so that we can have a carryover and a proper transitioning. Our children are leaving the public school, going to the charter school, taking funds with them, so we're creating hostile environments. And most of our administrators don't know what to do. But teachers, you have the solution. You have the pulse of the people. You know exactly what's going on, and you need to speak it and stop fearing your job. Stand like Harriet stood and deliver, and God will protect you and your family. And he will prevent you from having harm done to you because you're speaking out. Some of the leaders must learn to speak out and not fear any man, because if God is on your side and if God is for you, who can be against you? Now, I'm imploring you that we don't need another school. We need a vision. We need a family resource center to create a school from that resource center, one that will educate our teachers to be more up to date with their skills, one that will learn new methodologies like Montessori technique, John Dewey technique, one children will understand that there is a new education coming forward, and that new education will introduce you to taking that child and balancing that child physically, mind, body, soul, and spirit. Our children are so disbalanced, we cannot begin to teach them until we settle their spirits. So we must work with the mind, body, soul, and spirit in a new form of education, not one that just will educate the academic mind. We must get the mind and the ear of that child by getting them prepared physically, mentally, and spiritually. So parents, don't push for another church to come in your community. Push for a family resource center to be in your community that's family and parent directed. They're funding for 10 parent information centers every year, parent resource centers, where they give $100,000 for these resource grants. $100,000 is a lot of money, but it takes more than that. Sometimes it takes $180,000 just to get started. But with $100,000, you can start on a shoestring with a parent resource directed center. And in that center, you can also have your spiritual base on Sunday and bring your speaker in to bring in not just another religion, but to bring in spirituality for character building. Our children need more character building than ever before. They don't need another church because religion is dogmatic, and we have too many diversities in religion, but we need to know what spirituality. Now, Moses knew it. Harriet listened to God throughout her whole path, living to be 93 years old. She didn't speak to you about a church, but she spoke to you about a relationship she had with the Creator. So we must teach our children and our parents to have a relationship with the Creator and be more spiritual-minded, and to know thyself is the first preservation. And once we teach our children from where we came from and to know thyself, they can be better character builders. And we can do this, parents and teachers, and we can do this because we know Moses was just a minimum amount of education that Harriet had. She was able to do it, and we can too. Look at all the talents that she possessed, and she didn't have the education we have. We have degrees upon degrees nowadays, and we're not doing a thing for our institutions called education. Well, we're going to turn that around, and we're going to make a difference, and we have to do that today. We can no longer sit and talk about what we're angry about or what we don't want to see in our communities. We can make a change. Our resource centers can be built upon the family neighborhood center concept. There are family resource centers directed specifically for race appropriate or for disability appropriate, but they're available, and you can start them without having degrees upon degrees, and there are agencies that were willing to help you to put together your grant and write your proposal and start them in your own community. And if you need to know more about it, just give Omi a call, and I will assist you and direct you to the appropriate person to write and answer your grant, because every year they accept at least 10 for Family Directed Resource Center. And there are also PTIs, Parent Information Center. We'll be doing a whole session on Parent Information Center and Family Resource Center. We'll be doing a grant writing session on our next segment starting the month of May. You don't want to miss it, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much. And you've been listening to Maddie Harvey's baby sister, and I implore you to be a part of what we're doing. We're doing something here in this room, and we're asking you to join us in our effort to rebuild schools and that new educational system where we look at mind, body, soul, and spirit. Stay tuned.
Mother is a message. God, take it, the message. The message to our brothers and sisters.